Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so happy that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. So a little background, I am owner and founder of I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing, and I am on a mission to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and to empower people, especially adults, to own their voice and talents that come in so many different forms. So this space was created to talk with people with all different kinds of jobs, hobbies, and interests, and to have conversations about experiences and perspectives, all centered around three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? Then we have a free-flowing conversation, and we see where it goes. So I have had the opportunity to talk to so many different people in so many different kinds of jobs. Musicians, Reiki masters, mediums, doctor, lawyer, real estate agents, entrepreneurs as young as 13, and so many more. And these conversations explore the reality that creativity is not cute. It is necessary. People have defined creativity as their soul's essence, courage, imagination. Basically, all that we are and want to be. So I believe that sharing these stories expands one's thinking and opens up self-expression to feel more empowered, connected, and dare I say, happy. So my inspiring guest for today is Nina Hart. Nina of Kaizen Muse is a Kaizen Muse creativity coach. Excuse me if I said that wrong. Of the Gateless Method Writing Facilitator. Facilitator, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, author and founder of Writing from the Top of Your Head. She conducts online workshops and one-on-one creativity coaching. Nina loves helping blocked writers move forward to tell their brave stories that only they are meant to tell. Nina, welcome to the space.
Hollis.
I am so sorry I butchered your intro.
You know, it's not every day someone has to say Kaizen Muse or Gateless Method. Like, it's not a common word to use in your kitchen while you're cooking. So I totally love that you messed with it creatively. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your understanding.
Of course. I love mistakes. Mistakes are great. So there are no mistakes.
I love it. We're going to talk so much about that. Could you please give the listeners like a little bit more about you before we dive in and find out more and more?
Sure. Thank you again for having me on your show. I'm just so honored. And I loved your intro about, you know, everything you were saying about creativity. And I think we need to advocate for it like you're doing. So thank you so much. And for saying it's not cute. I love that.
Thank you.
Way more than that.
That came in a meditation. In a meditation, that was a download. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so true. So anyways, thank you. And my journey as a creative began like all of us began, you know, as a young child who is highly creative. And I think we all are when we come into this world. But I knew from an early age that I had a special calling or tendency towards all things creative. And I became a modern dancer at an early-ish age and a professional dancer later. I always played music. I became a professional bass player eventually. And I was always a writer, but I hid it from other people. So, you know, I loved writing in school, and I always knew in the back of my heart that writing was my thing. But again, it felt the most vulnerable to bring forward. So I would say that path led me to where I am now. I was one of those blocked writers. I would go to writing classes and leave shaking and crying sometimes. I didn't feel very safe in a lot of artistic environments that I'd already put myself in terms of being a professional dancer and musician. And, you know, I think there is a lot of criticism in our culture that can happen at an early age or at any stage of being a creative. So, you know, not only am I highly creative, but highly sensitive, and that critique really made me feel like it was even less safe to come out into the world with my work, especially as a writer. So long story short, I decided to stop going to writing classes about 15 years ago and find my own path back to my writer self, which was a process of unwinding a lot of my own self-critic and also opening up to a stream of writing that I had been blocking and not allowing myself to have. And once I found that, I really felt I was writing from the top of my head and not from my ego and not from trying to be a good writer. And there's a longer story around that, but I won't get into all that. Stories are really important in our lives. And, you know, those moments of those formative moments of where the story became a meaning in my life took me to my next step. So all that said, I decided after I unwound from all of this conditioned behavior towards my writing that I wanted to start teaching that. And I decided that I also wanted to become a creativity coach so I could offer even more tools both to myself as a creative, but also to other artists, so they wouldn't have to suffer the slings and arrows that I went through, for so long. So I put those two things together and created Writing from the Top of Your Head, which is what I teach now and how I coach.
There's so many things to be said, and I'm really looking forward to diving in, but it's just immediately making me think, writing from the top of your head, I mean, as far as chakras go, that's the, you know, spirituality. It's like you're open. You're open to the higher self. So it's kind of like, I don't know if there's connotations towards that in your thinking, but that's immediately what I'm thinking, is that it's like that higher level.
Yeah, that's such a good question and statement. I do believe that. I feel like it was kind of an awakening in myself and an opening. And it's funny because before I came onto this podcast today, the word open really resonated with me, like as a theme of, you know, you sent me a few questions and I just kept hearing the word open. And, you know, there are so many ways to answer questions. And, you know, when I got that one word, I thought, okay, we're going to talk about that today. And so there you are. But, you know, I also, you know, in grounded terms, like there's a quote that I saw that from Emily Dickinson, and she said, "It should feel like the top of your head is open. That is poetry." Mm-hmm. And, you know, Emily didn't know from chakras. She didn't know about, maybe she did, who knows? But, you know, I think that's a beautiful thing to say for someone coming from an era where there was not a lot of openness. And she was there to catch those ideas coming in through the top of her head. And I have some kinship with that way of thinking. So, but yeah, it is a way of getting away from what we call the ego and into a state of openness and not blocking and giving permission.
Yeah, I see. I can like, I resonate so much with it, and it comes in so many different forms. It's like when getting these like downloads, and when it's coming in from the top, it's like the shot of excitement. Yes. It's like, oh my God, okay. how am I gonna, not the how, but like, okay, I'm taking action for me and whatever that is. Like, okay, I want to go for a walk in order to feel this more. I want to grab my laptop to write the idea down. I want to talk into something so I don't forget it. I want to, you know, immediately get writing or get into that download and whatever it is. It's just such an exhilarating feeling.
Yes, I love that. And all the while you were talking, I just had this big smile on my face because, you know, the kind of joy that can bring to a person is, you know, it's part of why I do what I do. And I know why you do what you do. It's because that kind of joy that we can have when we were children, you know, to that state of wonder is a possibility for all of us. And we need it so much, you know. And, you know, my smile is also because that sense of adventure and surprise is so important to the creative process. Because when I started really opening to my writing, I would call it getting on my amusement park ride. Mm. So I would sit down and I would say, okay, we're going to go for a ride. Like I'd set a timer for 10 minutes and I'd be like, whatever this ride takes me on, I'm on the spaceship now. And, you know, I loved that sense of, you know, I guess having the courage enough to get out of my own way and not try to control what was coming through me, and know that through not controlling would come something that is greater than I could imagine trying to create on my own without that state of wonder, openness, and surprise. So I love that amusement park ride.
Oh my gosh. Okay, we're going to get started in all this. That's all of those words. I mean, so many words are just resonating so much, like state of wonder, adventure, surprise, courage, lack, not being in control. Oh my gosh. Okay, so here we go. So welcome to those that are joining us live. Very happy that you are here. Please feel free to put in any questions or comments in the chat box below where we can see them. So I'm going to give you a would you rather question, and then we'll dive into the first question. So, wonderful. Nina, would you rather dye your hair blue or red?
Oh my gosh. Okay, we're going to dive into that. Of course, blue. I feel like I should dye my hair red because that's maybe more acceptable at my age, but blue, I love the color blue, and I had blue hair when I lived in San Francisco, and I was so proud of my blue head.
Was it all blue?
It was all blue. Uh-huh. It was short.
Love it.
All blue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend it.
It felt good. It was empowering, right?
Yeah. I think my friend did it in her bathtub. Like it was just the whole process was so messy and fun. And I think that was all part of having blue hair as well. So I guess that's my short answer to your question.
Yeah, I totally get it. I've never dyed my whole head a color. I've had streaks in, and I've had the blue, and I've had the bright red. And what was funny with the bright red was when I was working at the last school that I was at a fourth grader. So funny. So in the morning, you know, we'd do our greetings and hold the door. I'd say, good morning, good morning, good morning. Probably really annoying to people because I was pretty upbeat. And they're probably like, shut up, Miss Citron. Like, we're just waking up and walking in. But this one girl who, very expressive with her face. She didn't really have to use her words very much. And she looks at me and she goes, why? And I said, because I can, and it makes me happy and it makes me feel good. And she just looked at me with no words. And I'm just going to use my words kind of like what her eyes were saying. She was like, huh, okay. And then she just kept walking. I was like, that was the best expression.
Wow. It's a great thing coming from a kid to you just want to sit her down and say, let's really talk about this. Like, why do you think why? And, you know, don't you want to do it too? I imagine, like, I love those kids whose parents let them dye their hair in little streaks and all that. So, you know, kids are always painting themselves. So, I'd be so curious to talk to her more, but I love her expression and how you described that.
It's just her whole face. So, okay. Anyway, yeah. So the blue hair, I love it, love it, love it. So yeah. Let's go into our first official question, okay. Which is, how do you define creativity?
Yeah, well, that is a huge question, and one could Google it. And I would hope for myself in answering that question that I would not Google it, because it seems like if you were to ask me that question in an hour, I'd want to answer it differently. And, you know, so for today, that answer is about being open. And tomorrow it could mean like Sir Ken Robinson's definition of applied imagination. You know, I think it's important to not limit answering that question, because I would want to be in the creative process while I was answering it, which would involve perhaps improvisation, intuition, inspiration, evolution. And applied imagination. So another thought about creativity being about being open, is for today, I feel like that takes me into the realm of, we are a culture that wants to know things, hence the Google, and it is very product oriented, and it's scary to go into the unknown. And not only our culture, but in our conditioning as humans, our primal brain says, don't get lost. It's important to know where you're going. And creativity says, get lost. It's important to not know where you are going. Mm. And so, you know, that primal brain, it's really smart. It's trying to keep us safe. So, you know, say if we were in the forest and we got lost and there was a bear, we would feel like if we got lost, we would actually die. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same for our creative mind, that part of what shuts us down and creates blocks is that we equate that sense of safety about getting lost with actually death. Yeah, like a lot of the writers I work with as a coach, you know, it literally, and I've felt it in myself, like when I don't know where I'm going with my writing, my inner critic just comes in so strongly, because it feels like a kind of death if I were to go through that portal of into chaos, you know, and not knowing. So again, like trusting in that process is a part of, an essential part of creativity. And yet, you know, our culture again is one that is always saying, well, what is the book you're writing, and where's the outline, and where's the map, and you must have proof that you are a writer. Mm-hmm. You know, or an artist, like all those things. And yet we've lost the process, and there's so much joy in getting lost and finding, oh, that's what I wanted to say, or that's who I am, or that's how I feel. There's my soul. I lost my soul temporarily. I'm going to find it through this artistic process. So hope that's my answer for right now.
Oh my gosh, so much joy in getting lost. What I'm really resonating with how you responded was the fact that the definition changes per day, mm-hmm. which is, and today you said creativity is to be open, and it not being important to limit and answering the question to say this is the steadfast answer, which I think is brilliant. And I so agree with this whole idea of the primal brain and safety. And, you know, it's there to be able, like you said, keep us safe. You know, don't want you to get hurt. The caveman, you know, times or, you know, yeah. saber-toothed tigers coming at you, you know, you need to protect yourself. So here we see these triggers. We see these things that we perceive as being dangerous. So our brain wants to keep us safe. And there is, I couldn't agree more that there is so much messiness in the process. And a lot of time there's that hesitation. It's hysterical when it's like, well, show us proof. Or that looks like a friggin' mess. Like, what are you doing? And you're like, wait, this is the process. Yeah. We got to like get to the end of it. And the end of it could be, you know what, that didn't work out. And yeah. I need to kind of go back to the drawing board, or all of these open, because of the openness, because of the downloads and the what you're discovering along the way, you're like, oh, I need to, you know, I'm thinking within visual art terms here, but, you know, I need to grab this material. I need to grab that. Or if you're in the middle of a business deal, okay, well, that's not going well. So, okay, let's come at it from a different angle. Maybe I need to connect with this different person in order to hear their point of view and their perspective for them to, you know, come in on the deal. Or maybe we just need to reach a different audience with our message or whatever that looks like. It's like pivot, mess, yeah. process.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And you just spoke about two different creativity coaching tools that I was taught by Jill Bodonsky, the founder of Kaizen Muse Creativity Coaching. So that sort of like pivot, she calls it an intuitive detour. And it's so important to be able to detour in our creative process. Like, and as big as I thought I was going to write a novel, but I'm writing a cookbook now. Or, you know, this business meeting went from here to there, and let's follow that process and be willing to make mistakes and learn from those and figure out what's next. And so that's one tool that you just mentioned, intuitive detour. And the other one is, I love this tool, and it's to be used at the beginning of any creative process because it really helps. And it's just a mantra that says, keep it small and crappy. And I love that because it's really about lowering your expectations at the beginning of any creative venture, because, you know, that's where the gold is. And when we overlay expectations, it creates a dampening down of that process. So keeping it small and crappy, I actually have an exercise I do with my students, like it's foundational, and I say do this as often as possible. And it's, we write for 10 or 5 minutes, 10 minutes, writing the worst sentences you could ever imagine, like so bad, so atrocious, that if someone hears the writing, they're going to say, that's the worst writing I have ever heard in my entire life. And gosh, or the most boring, or listen to their grammar. Oh my gosh, they should be so embarrassed. And, you know, that is actually a state of openness when you can actually practice the practice of small and crappy, practice the practice of making something actually purposefully bad, because it gets us out of all of those expectations we put, you know, on ourselves. And that's what kids do. Again, they're not concerned about being good. So anyways, you mentioned Small and Crappy, another tool.
So everybody hear that? Mantra, keep it small and crappy.
Yeah. You can always edit later. Remember that.
You can, but it's really that it's interesting because when I was in the classroom, you know, taught art for 30 years and to from ages 2 to 100 in so many different settings. And what I would see is especially in, you know, as we kind of go on, you know, kids are getting more self-conscious.
Yeah.
So starting in third grade, you know, kids are starting to get more self-conscious. Actually, the cutoff would be general. That would be on a case-by-case basis. But by fourth grade, people were starting to put themselves in categories. Mm-hmm. And it would make me crazy when a teacher would say, and they didn't mean to do it, but they'd be like, oh, so-and-so is the artist of the room.
Right.
And when they would, you know, line them up outside before I'd bring them in the room, and I'd think, oh my God, could you not do that? Yeah. I mean, seriously. And it's not just to be politically correct of this, oh, everybody's this, everybody's mm-hmm. that. But what that does is it just shuts people down because, okay, maybe they aren't the best drawer, but I had a kid, I did this project, side note, with pasta. We built pasta cars. And then we had a race with them to see who could go the farthest. And this kid who constantly was being sent to the principal built the best friggin' pasta car that went the fastest. And he was so engaged and he was seeing it from all angles and getting the physics of it of, okay, well, if you place this here and you put these here and you put the glue here, then it won't get in the way of the wheels moving and just all of this. And it was so exciting to see him so engaged and excited and being seen in a positive light.
Right.
But it's not just within, I'm talking about just being within, you know, my zone of genius, you know, within just what I'm doing, I got to see that, but it exists in all areas. It's like whatever you're doing, like I'll put it in the context of writing. If somebody made an announcement and said, this is the best writer in the classroom. Well, mm-hmm. that just sucks for everybody else, doesn't it?
Right. Who would want to create after that, like if that's the designated writer? And I mean, I know what that does to a person's spirit. And when they're young, they remember those moments, their imprints.
Yeah.
I love that you were a different kind of art teacher. And, you know, I really believe that there is a kind of wake-up call that has to happen in the arts, in our world. Just, well, Suzanne Kingsbury, who founded Gateless Method Writing, she calls it the cult of criticism. And it's almost like an addiction to criticism, and we're sort of imprinted on that form at an early age. And, you know, we all have these stories, and that's where we leave parts of ourselves behind. And, you know, I've seen it in fourth graders too, because I've worked with kids some, and it's a mysterious thing, like, oh my gosh, what happens in fourth grade, you know? And how delicate and sensitive it is to be a teacher of children or adults in the arts because of those very wounds. And it's, thank you for being a different kind of teacher. So.
Oh, well, thank you. But it really is, I think it kind of goes across the board that when you're willing to meet people where they are and listen to them, again, within, you know, within the visual arts, it was, you know, I'd get kids saying, well, I'm into sports. I don't want to be here, or I can't. So within the context of what we were doing, or if we needed to go out of what we were doing to get them engaged, I'd be like, okay, so what do you like? Do you like music? Do you like sports? You said you like sports. So, okay, who's your favorite team? Oh, so and so. Oh, what colors are the uniforms? Oh, well, why don't you like design your own uniform? What if you had your own team? What would it look like?
That's
Like
beautiful.
here's like let's make your own. And then they're like, "Oh, I can do that?" Yeah. Can do anything. So, but it's that whole meeting people where they are with math. I can say if I had a decent math teacher ever, which I honestly never did, they would have met me where I was instead of telling me that I better marry a rich man because I can't count money. Which was probably meant to be sarcastic, but hey, 54 years old and it's still there. Like, I gotta let that go. Gotta let
They said that to you? They actually
it
said that to you
That was in second grade, yeah.
in
She was
second grade?
Probably just kind of, because we have our sarcastic moments at times. I'm sure she didn't mean to imprint me with that,
But you do remember
I
it.
do
So
remember.
it's somewhere echoing in the back of your mind now. But I love what you say about, meeting people where they're at. And I think for any kind of facilitator, like to, behind that belief of meeting people where they're at is a belief. I think what you're saying is that everyone has their own genius. Everyone has their own experience that they can bring to the world that is unique to them and will help the world. And so if that kid is making a different kind of outfit for the football team, by engaging his creative mind, like that's going to open him to possibilities in the future, where he might be in, say, a profession as a person in sports where he can think out of the box and give himself permission to do things differently. And creativity is about that too, just like what are the possibilities instead of what is patterned into us and expected, and utilizing who you are as that unique person to create what you are here to create and offer. So,
Yeah, I love that. I love that kind of segue. Because again, you're right. Open is kind of like a key word in this conversation. Open gateway permission. I'd like to touch on before we segue into the second question. Here, I titled this "Helping Writers Tell the Brave Stories Only They Can Tell." So, here you touched on that whole concept that we are unique beings. We all have stories. In what you do, how do you really get people into that safe space? Because we do all have stories, and yeah, you know what I'm asking as I'm just kind of stumbling on my words here.
No, that's a great question. And it's one I think about a lot because, when I was in high school, I was or from an earlier age too. I have ADHD and, I've got my own learning challenges. And I never felt that school really fit me. And I was always curious as to why, like, what's going on here? And, why do I not fit in? And I started reading books on education in high school, like John Dewey and A.S. Neale, Jonathan Kozol, Paulo Freire, educators who thought differently and incorporated, how can I bring each person into the educational environment in a way that welcomes them, as different. And I know that from what you just showed about your own art classes, like you did that so well. And I have thought about curriculum a lot, and I think through observing what did not work for me in public schools and then as in my arts education, I started taking note and going, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that to someone. And out of that, along with learning about gateless method facilitation, which is a method of delivering feedback that is only focused on pointing out a person's genius and what you love about their work, and focusing on themes or color or how they brought out a feeling, focusing on what you love is a whole different container that students can enter, where they know they're not going to have someone say, oh, you should change that. Or, as the baby of their work is trying to walk, they say, you should be flying by now. Or, because our inner critic is so ready to swoop in when we feel vulnerable. And so I know how vulnerable it can be to speak your words out loud. And I've had students come into my workshops who could read only one sentence. And I give space for that. Like, don't even read if you don't want to. But they went from reading one sentence to doing stand-up comedy and singing at the top of their lungs on their guitar.
Wow.
I know. To me, that's like the happiest place, as a facilitator. So creating that safe space and making sure I have it, really thought through is part of what I do, both in offering feedback, but also like how prompts are delivered. And my writing from the top of your head program, I have an 8-module do-it-yourself online program that takes artists through kind of a step-by-step experience and practice of learning how to fall again and not be good and make mistakes, and out of that let something else rise up, and then get all the tools to help you build resilience so you can go out into the world and tell your brave stories. Mm. So I don't think it's a little thing to tell our brave stories. It's huge. It's, and we have to create inner safety. Like, that's really what it comes down to. It's like inside, how do I feel and know about what I do in my creativity?
Yeah. So, yeah. Because it all starts with feeling safe from the outside, but it really all starts from the inside. It's that facing things within ourselves, being comfortable in ourselves, liking ourselves. God, so much of what you're saying is just, that is when somebody goes from creating that such a safe space where somebody can only say a sentence to singing, oh my gosh, it's that whole belief that there, you don't go from A to Z in a straight line. It's not like zoop. There's lots of broken lines, zigzags, curves, loop-de-loops on how we get there. But tell us about your, I know you have a thing with weirdest writing prompts.
Weirdest writing prompts?
Didn't you tell me something in the beginning that you like give them specifically weird writing prompts just as another way to get out of their head?
Yeah, you're right. I didn't know I called them a thing, but now I like that, weirdest writing prompts. I need to write that down. Okay, yeah. So, I have a writing prompt based on Russell Edson's poem, Let Us Now Consider, I think that's what it's called. And he was a poet who wrote the really wacky poetry, like, really strange. And one of the lines in his poem is a mother who serves ape to her children.
Okay.
And another is man who mistakes a lampshade for his wife.
Yeah.
So these Dr. Seuss says, I like nonsense, it wakes up the brain cells. So these kinds of prompts wake up the brain cells and allow, that's a childlike thing to say, how is the mother serving ape to her children? And, we don't really want to talk about that as adults, but let's, and so that's one of the weird prompts. And then I have another based on, I call them the Marilyns. And this was a teacher that I had while I lived in Seattle. She wasn't a teacher. She just led a writing group. She was in her 80s in a little old cafe. Mm-hmm. And we all sat around a table. This was when I was starting to crawl back into the writing world. And Marilyn helped me find my voice. And it was not a class. It was basically, she would give us these weird prompts. And now I call them Marilyn prompts and I give them to my students. But she was a former English teacher. She was in her 80s. She was retired. She was into like really strange writing, like noir, but like sexy noir writing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I love that she was following that in her own writing. But her prompts were really strange and they helped get me out of my head. And I would have to try to remember one of those, but they had magic in them. And I've seen it with my students too, like this special magic of the weird prompt. Yeah.
Yeah. So you hear that, everybody? Got to get out of your head and get into this fun, imaginative space. Because it's like finish the sentence or tell a story with man who mistakes a lampshade for his wife. And then just like go off on it and see what happens. And I love it.
Yeah. There's another one. It's a woman fights a tree. And that's very evocative.
It is. Oh my gosh. The stories you must get from that.
So good. So good. And I've worked with kids, and the kids, like they just really take to those. Yeah. It's amazing.
Whew. Okay, so Nina, tell us a little bit more about how you invite creativity into your own life.
Yeah, that's a funny question because I would say that I actually have to battle keeping it out of my life. Mm-hmm. And it's a funny, I don't know why I answered it like that, but I really feel as an entrepreneur and a person with ADHD who's trying to fit into this world and create, it requires a lot of skills that I feel I don't have naturally. And so, I find myself having to use my executive functioning skills, planning, linear, even navigating anything having to do with an entrepreneurial life, I find I have to go against my creative proclivities of just wanting to create stand-up comedy bits all day long. but I need to have, I love my work and I need to have a job. So that's kind of important. So, but I think the more I've opened to my own creativity, the more that filters into my entrepreneurial work and I make it more fun and I stay open to what feels right and I follow that instead of trying to control even that part of my life. And because I work on, the process of opening is a part of my life. Like I love walking. Walking is one of my favorite things to do as a creative. And so many ideas come through me when I walk. But, if I have a problem I'm trying to solve, like if I take a walk, it'll probably get solved or, do the dishes, something that gets me in the alpha state. My creative practice right now is actually everything in my life. And And I'm working on a lot of stand-up comedy bits that since the pandemic occurred, I can't go back on stage, and it's been an interesting time. So,
So did you do, you've done stand-up comedy?
Yeah, it was where my intuitive detour took me after I wrote my book of short stories and started teaching. I found improv, and then I started going to stand-up comedy open mics, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can bring my unique way of telling stories to the stage. You know, being Jewish, I have a proclivity towards strange humor, and it's, if you met my family, you would probably have the same laughter.
I totally relate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that has to go somewhere. And, you know, living in the South, I live in Asheville, North Carolina, and being a Jewish person in the South has brought up a lot of comedy material. Anyways, it is just, you know, because I've learned to follow my joy, you know, playing bass started becoming a chore. It started becoming like, I have to be perfect at this because I started performing a lot and I did not like the pressure. And so finding my way to the next thing that brought me joy, like it was like, oh, I'm actually really good at this stand-up thing. You know, once I started going out on stage and I got paid $25 once. Mm-hmm. I'd only been doing it like a year before the pandemic hit.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So wait, so tell me, because I'm like, so I'm sitting here smiling because I know that you said that you were very shy. There was a big introverted part of you. And I know that comedians often, many of them are shy. And it's kind of this alter ego that you go up and you can be somebody else. But I don't know. Tell me about that. Tell me about how it feels, first of all, to be up there and then breaking through that feeling introverted or being introverted and telling your brave story.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a good question. You know, I am an introverted extrovert. I've always been a performer. So I've got like a clown inside of me that really loves to come out. And once I'm on stage after the initial jitters, I'm like, oh, I'm a fish thrown back in water. Like this is my, this is where it, you know, I come most alive. And, you know, I grew up in a family where nobody listened to me. I was the youngest and I, you know, nobody really cared about what I had to say. I hate to say that, but it's mostly true. And yeah, so to actually be able to get on a stage and take my unique thoughts out there and actually have a captive audience, it's kind of very deeply fulfilling in that way. But I have a huge amount of stage fright. Like I've walked into a comedy venue and out the other door many, many times. Mm-hmm. I shake when I get on stage and I use it as part of my act and I talk about it. And, you know, that's the only way through because it's a very hard navigation for me. And I can't say I've mastered it all yet. And, but it's true for many, many performers, as you say, like they're introverted and they have a huge battle with stage fright.
So, but it's a friend of mine has this space that she calls, you know, the adventures of humanness. And, and I think that it's brilliant, as you know, comedians do, and as you're doing, where you're using this, you know, you're talking about what's happening, you're not hiding it. It's this is kind of what happens, and then you make jokes about it, and then, but standing up, I have to say, like stand-up comedy, it makes me so nervous because I'm like, what if they're not funny? Like, another friend of mine, she's done it, and she said, there's nothing like that for those people in the front row that are looking through you.
It's true. And you hope the lights are dark enough that you can't see them out in the audience. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, in the, again, that feeling of I'm going to die, if I get up here is one of the greatest fears, public speaking, but actually the stand-up stage where it's like it does rely on getting laughs. And I would like to not rely on getting laughs as well and be okay with that. Like, as because my work is not a, I don't, I'm not a jokey stand-up comic. I'm more of a like, let's tell a winding story that leads to the absurdity of life in a way that makes you laugh, and maybe learn something, I hope. And so I think there's a pressure for laughs, but I don't want to be there. But it is terrifying because there is like a lot of expectation to get laughs, and you have these people really staring at you, either deadpan or you're making them like when you are making them laugh, secret, like this is a secret. If anybody out there wants to get up on that stand-up stage, just that first laugh where it's uproarious and magical, like that will feed you for years to come. Like I recommend that. It's just the most amazing feeling when it's on. Yeah.
Gosh, I love it's whoo, brave, just braveness, and it's just so real and it's so vulnerable, and it's yeah, I just love that you're doing that. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, if you lived in the same town after the pandemic, I would say, Hollis, let's go and do some stand-up comedy. And I'd say, why don't you get up there for 1 minute?
Oh my gosh. It's so funny because I was always so shy as a kid. Like I would turn multiple shades of purple, and they weren't pretty shades of purple. They were blotchy and very unattractive. And I just wanted to hide. And when life started kind of unfolding and it was like, oh, you're going to be a teacher. I'm like, I'm going to be a teacher. Are you serious? Like, I'm going to stand in front of people and talk and lead professional development and have my own company and do all this stuff. I didn't, what? But when it first started, I was like, okay, we're doing this because it was bigger than me. So I was facing it and doing it. And yeah, when I was leading with kids, I was like, okay, I can do this. And then when it was like, okay, we want you to do a professional development for 30 teachers, I'm like, what? And I would say to them, I learned to say straight out, I'm like, look, if my face turns multiple shades, like I'm not gonna die, I'm not gonna pass out, it just happens. And then we laugh, we move on, it's done. So I kind of learned that as a coping mechanism. To draw attention to it in the sense of so they don't have to worry about me and I can kind of get past it
Yeah. I think that is essential.
too.
Like, yeah, I will say on stage, oh, you notice my feet are shaking. I'm not going to hide that. My little red shoes are moving at, tap dancer speed. But I love that you're taking care of yourself, and I hope that the world is moving. I think it is moving more toward, what Brené Brown calls, this kind of vulnerability where that is courage. And yeah, and by you saying, stating out loud, like, hey, this is what's going to happen, and you might notice this, and I'll be okay. Yeah, you've allowed yourself that room to, like, that's when you can relax, is when you get to say that. And I love what you said about also about how you realized it was bigger than you. And I think anybody who decides to step out of their comfort zone, like that's a really good mantra. Like, this is bigger than me. And I love that you let that guide you through your teaching career into bigger and bigger things. So.
I appreciate that. Thank you. But I think it's gotten me to the point, like with the publishing house that I have, and my second multi-author book is called Invisible No More, Stepping into the Spotlight. And you know how we are our own best clients. But it's gathering those people that have a story to share, that have a story that got through whatever it was, whether it's health related, trauma, emotional, whatever it is that kept them small or hidden. And then they got to a point where they're like, I'm not doing it anymore. Like, this is bigger than me. There's a, I have to speak up. I have to take action. I have to do something because it doesn't feel right otherwise.
Right. And I think we all know what that is. Like, everybody has that little whisper inside that says, oh, you know, if only I could get through this, then I would be this other person in the world. Not because it's going to get you applause, but because it fulfills some kind of spirit that you were born into to be. So, yeah.
Whew. Well, as we are almost at the top of the hour, I want you to, we've spoken about all this, but kind of like put a nice little bow on, why do you think creativity is important?
Well, yeah, it's everything we are speaking about today. You know, I think it's both important on a personal level, but also on a societal level, that creativity is, you know, it is primally patterned into who humans are, and it is there to help create change and growth and solve problems. And we have a lot of problems right now in our culture. And, you know, I think only creative solutions are what are going to get us out of this, not trying to do things the same way. And so as a society, you know, on a big level, creativity is essential. It's the only way. And it's patterned into who we are. But on a personal level, like, you know, it creates dopamine, happy chemicals. We're in a pandemic. A lot of people I know get depressed when they don't have creativity in their lives. Like, even if it's just singing, like, by a karaoke machine kind of thing. Or, like, a real creative practice. You know, creativity brings us into the process, and the process again brings us into curiosity and connection, sometimes with others. If we're doing creativity with others, it feeds our soul. Like, it gets us out of bed in the morning. You know, I think people who don't have a creative practice or employ their creativity, like, I just feel so sad about the people that don't have that. And yeah, and they should. They need it. We all are deserving of it.
It does get us out of bed. And it is, I so agree, process, curiosity, connection. Just in people just understand that it doesn't have to be this whole big thing. It doesn't have to be about drawing and painting. It's about what resonates with you in ways that you can express yourself, whether it's going out and taking a walk, whether it's drinking that drink that is very nourishing and just lights you up and makes you feel good, whether it's writing, whether it's cooking that meal that you were like, oh my God, I've always wanted to do that and I haven't taken the time to do it. Like, doing these little things for yourself that are just fulfilling and fun and messy and make a damn mess. Damn it.
Make it even more atrociously messy. Like, so messy that there's mud all through your house on the floors and ceilings. I love what you just said, like, really bringing it back into those little processes that aren't about, you know, what we think they are, but they could be anywhere in our lives.
Nina, how can people find you?
Yeah, you can go to www.writingfromthetopofyourhead.com, which is a very long URL. You can sign up for my newsletter there, and I do a free creativity chats and prompts hour once a month, and you would get a Zoom link for that, and that is an adventure. And you can also, yeah, find out how to get in touch with me there.
Ah, this has been so much fun, Nina. Thank you so much for taking this hour to chat.
Oh, thank you, Hollis. Like, I just love the way you ask questions and how you see the world. And I loved hearing about your experiences as a creative yourself. And really, it's a gift that you have. And I so enjoyed this.
Oh, you're so kind. You really are. I truly, truly appreciate it. And I get to meet like you, it just is you, incredible people, and us sharing stories and telling our brave stories and just being vulnerable. And this space is all about connecting and inspiring each other and sharing. And I believe we've always needed this, but we need it now more than ever. So please like, follow, share so we can spread the word and lift each other up. And on a side note, my new multi-author book, Creativity Is Whatever You Want It to Be, is out in paperback. So check it out. Go to Amazon, wherever you are in this world, and check it out at 20 incredible contributors expanding the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush. And I just couldn't be more proud. So I thank you, thank you, thank you for those who joined us live, catching the replay. I wish you a good morning, a good afternoon, a good evening, wherever you are in this world, and we'll be talking again soon. So goodbye, everybody.